morning, everyone, and welcome once again to our Sunday morning sunrise call. We are always so excited to see so many of you pop in for our support group and for this safe space that's filled with love and compassion and a willingness and a desire for us to help ourselves and our families. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. As you all know, we have a monthly, very special session with Dr. Linda McGee, where she has so graciously shared her time with us over the past, oh gosh, 4.5 years. But she has been a regular, consistent expert. Yes, it's been 4.5 years. We started this in 2020. Dr. Linda McGee is here with us on the first Sunday of the month with an open session. For those of you who have been here before, Dr. McGee is a clinical psychologist, attorney, and nationally recognized mental health expert and speaker. She has been featured everywhere: The Washington Post, Forbes, New York Times, Huffington Post, on and on and on, including BET's America in Black special on mental health in the Black community. She has been a professor. She has served on the faculty at the Washington School of Psychiatry and currently serves as a former president of the Maryland Psychological Association. She has produced films, co-produced films on mental health, has been guest speaker everywhere. And really importantly for our group, she is here as a friend, as a supporter, as a board member of the Sunrise Project, and just a passionate sister friend. I call her part of my underground sisterhood, and I so appreciate her. So today is an open session. It's open for anyone who wants to share, who might want to have an opportunity to work through an issue with Dr. McGee's expertise and wisdom, anything that's on your heart. So I am going to turn it over to Dr. McGee, and we will start. I will just say I was speaking with Vicki, Dr. Vicki Johnson, this morning, a little bit ago, when we were talking about this notion of survival mode and how many of us are in the survival mode space. Tina Lifford talks about it as well, shifting from survival to thriving. Surviving to thriving to the infinite self. And so I want to get your perspective on that as we open it up for conversation this morning.
First of all, I just want to say it's on my heart to say that, first of all, good morning to everyone.
Good
And those of
morning.
you who are looking at me on video, excuse my beach Pilates look, but it is what it is.
You look beautiful.
And
Pilates evolved.
hey, I'm happy with where I am. But what I wanted to say is that I'm blessed to be here, and that for those of you who are listening that have come here via your children, I came to Sunrise through Kelly. And I think Kelly and I have both found a lot of purpose here. And so that's just been on my heart to say is if there is something riding in your heart or that's rolling with you right now about things that you want to do, things that you want to accomplish, things that you want to help other people with, follow that. And to go back to Kelly's question, Kelly, we did not rehearse this, but the thing that I was going to lead off with dovetails perfectly. It's about a study that just came out about Black people and Black women and how we weather, right? And but how we weather storms by staying in the survival mode, right? But that survival mode comes at a cost. It comes at, because the body and your nervous system is not meant to be in a fight or flight mode all the time. Like you're hyped up all the time to guard against racism, sexism, all of the things that the world brings upon you, but it comes at the price of our mental health. And a lot of the nation's leading Black doctors are sort of fronting this study right now that su suggests that these diseases are coming to us because we are weathering. And so that there's a cost of this being in this survival mode for long periods of time. And we need to really be conscious of that we are in survival mode and take steps to combat that and to get out of survival mode when you can, right?
Right,
We
absolutely.
can't self-care our way out of oppression, but self-care does help keep us steady through the storms.
Think self-care, and also I've been getting curious with why I react to certain things the way I do. And then that space of curiosity, it allows a really quiet peace as I sit in that question.
And when you're thinking about how you react to things, it's easier to think about how other people react to things, right? And it you listen to them with an entirely different mindset because you see the hurt and you see the pain. You know, I was listening to someone the other day and they were African American and they were actually saying negative things about African Americans. But now when I hear that and I see that before, it still triggers me. But now I can see and understand like how people get there, right? It doesn't start with them on a stage, right? It starts with people denigrating them and not being supportive of them. And then they grow into this person that doesn't really like themselves. And a lot of times that comes out in like not liking other people that look like them. So when you get to that point where you can start reflecting on how you got there. So Kelly, what's your big insight about some of the things that how you got to some of the biggest trigger point that you have now?
I think how I've gotten there is Dr. Vicky put in the post a lot of focus on self and self-care and not saying yes to everything. That is number one. Number two is I have opened up my space to accept help. And that looks like people offering to come. I'm moving in a week and a half. And really downsizing from you've been to my home, have a house in Bethesda, and going from a 6-bedroom home to a very, very perfectly sized, intimate apartment. And so in that process, the purging has been really helpful and allowing people to come help me do so. So that has been really powerful because I've shifted my mind from all these things that I've loved
Right.
to realizing that it's just stuff that's been taking up space for 20, 25 years. And
And
it's just stuff.
stuff takes time, Kelly, to maintain. So when you say saying no to stuff, keep buying stuff, taking care of stuff, packing stuff.
So that's the difference. This
Yes.
particular move, I'm not taking anything, very little. And that feels really empowering and really great.
Well,
And it's also blessing to other people, right? So as
right.
I give things away that I've loved, and I'll say, just take it. It feels so good. If I see the light and the joy in the other person.
You're taking yourself and
That's right.
you're taking a self that is unencumbered by 12 rooms of stuff.
Right. Very freeing, very liberating. That feels good.
And you're prioritizing that self.
Right. Absolutely. The other piece I think is being just telling myself the truth and telling people the truth very clearly and articulately. And that has been very freeing as well.
There are people that you have to deal with directly, right? And there are people that I have learned that you cannot deal with them. You just have to deal with them less. Because, their issues are not for you to talk about or to talk through. But communicating honestly with people that you're in intimate relationships with is also a form of self-care.
That's right. That's right.
I remember one time I said to someone I didn't like the way he treated me. And I was very young then, but that was the first time I had ever said something like that. I remember like it was yesterday. And I marked that as a turning point where I was just like, you didn't treat me very well. You weren't very kind. And it wasn't a big confrontation. It wasn't a big cuss out. But it was like, my feelings matter.
Absolutely. I wonder if anybody else has a comment or a thought, or if you're dealing with anything today that you'd love some coaching on from Dr. Linda, or if you just want to get something off your chest or
Yeah.
share, and it could be a good thing.
Or you can just check in, right? How are y'all doing out there? I just had a
I have
okay, go
something
ahead.
to
Go
share,
ahead.
or I guess just something that I'm feeling. And hi, Dr. Linda. Good morning. I am, I think, dealing with anticipatory grief this week, this weekend. Later in the week, next week is the anniversary of our mother's passing. And I've noticed as the years gone by, I think it'll be 6 or 7 years now since she passed. It gets easier to a degree. Never really easy, but the grief is not as it doesn't hurt as strongly as it once did. The pain is not as sharp on the actual anniversaries, like the holidays, the anniversaries. It's the lead up that is now my struggle in like thinking about how I'm going to feel on that day, if it's going to be hard, and then just the swirl of, thoughts that then create anxiety, and honestly can be like somewhat crippling. Like this past, I would say this weekend, I've really been struggling with my mental health and kind of, feeling motivated to go do things and be happy. And so I don't know if there's any if there's advice or tips you have for kind of navigating anticipatory grief.
I would say like that follows a classic anxiety pattern, right? In addition to being a grieving pattern, where you worry about the thing, and a lot of times the worry about the thing leading up to the events is in excess of the thing itself, like the anniversary, right? And so just having that knowledge that I am, every time I get to 10 days out, right, I'm going to start feeling a certain way is in itself a safeguard, right? Because you know that now that a few years have passed, the day itself might not be as bad. If you can, if your energy level will allow it, take some time to like do some distracting so it's not 10 straight days of just unfettered anticipatory grief and anxiety, right? Plan next year when those anniversaries come out, plan some things to do so that you're not just sitting there anticipating the grief day. And the third thing I want to say is that this anticipatory grief is grief, right? And so like during these times, to give yourself an hour or two where you're sitting down and you're journaling, you're writing down memories, you're cooking a recipe of your mom's. I know sometimes I think about my mother's legacy, right? What she left me and her grandchildren. So like it's a time for you to also feel that grief, but in a way that is more that is less anxiety provoking. Like try to think about ways that you can honor her, think about her, laugh about some of the things that you experienced together, and like process even more. I don't want you to like completely try to stuff all memories away because grief is a years-long process and everyone's is different. And to a certain extent, I think that people grieve their parents passing until they pass, right? The world is a lot different without your mother. So I don't want you to like completely stow it away, but I want you to like try to like put some parameters on it so that it's healthier and more adaptive for you. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It definitely does. I mean, I think I do some of those things. Like I made, a 4th of July cake like we used to do and things like that. And then it kind of it's helpful in the moment. And then, 5 hours later, I'm back in it again,
Right.
thinking about, things and feeling the anxiety and the weight of it all again. So, but yes, I hear what you're saying. I think definitely stuffing it away is not helpful. So addressing it, writing about it, talking about it is
And
does help me.
even to the extent that you can, to think about like what's wrapped up into that grief process with you. Right? Is it just your mother?
Oh no, it's
Yes.
definitely not. It's definitely
Yes.
not.
So think about that. Like, try to get in con touch with what else is happening with you when you're thinking about your mother.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
We were together, Dr. Linda, when I remember when your mother passed. And we were somewhere and it hit you at that time. I think losing a parent hits at different times. It could be the strangest places, but it, like you said, Heather, it gets easier and then it doesn't. It's just random moments. I think give yourself grace and love yourself the way you are. Take one day at a time.
Thank you.
Any other thoughts or comments or shares this morning?
Hi, my name is Chandra. I do have a share. Thank you for the call. I was on last week, so I really appreciate this. And a friend introduced me to you, Kelly, and what you're doing. For us, we live in Texas. I'm also a physician. I'm a surgeon, so things get really busy. I'm actually on my way to work to round. And Kelly, I am in the midst of where you were, based on your story. My son is 17. The added factor that both my children have ADHD, and we moved from California to Texas for work right before the pandemic, which hindsight is 2020, probably wasn't the best thing to do. Although we have some family here, we didn't have the family that we had back in California. And so the effect that it had on my children has been profound and devastating. They both didn't fare well at the private school that we had here, and public school really wasn't an option for them. And my daughter's an actress, and my son has less motivation from ADHD, anxiety, depression, but the Texas school that he was in for a couple of years really did a number on him. Where I say that I was where I was last night, where you were, Kelly, based on your story, you were in the midst of it last night. Suicidal thoughts. He started vaping. He started trying to find other ways to numb himself or trying to self-soothe himself, because the impulsivity and all the decisions that he makes that tend to be negative. Last year, they both went to boarding school out of state. My son went to a school that focuses on ADHD in Connecticut, and my daughter went to an art school in Boston, which many of the aspects of the school were good for him, but it obviously doesn't address all of the past issues. And so now they're home this summer, which has been wonderful. And literally, I'm just in a storm right now and trying to move forward with my husband, trying to figure out the best thing to do for both of them and for myself, because that stress that you mentioned, that weathering of the female mom, parent, whatever they do in society, is absolutely real. And I have a stressful job. And right now I'm just in it and without a way to get out, being the major breadwinner of a family where a lot of physicians find themselves, that are physicians that are women. So I appreciate all of you. I appreciate this call, and I'm I'm usually a private person. I don't usually open up, although I do have a village here. So, but I felt like I needed to release. So thank you for being there.
You do have a village, right?
Yes.
I want you to know that what you said just hits in so many profound ways. I mean, it's sort of like some summarizes why we started Sunrise, why Kelly started Sunrise was to help parents who, for public reasons, for career reasons, for trauma reasons, and for the fact that there's not a lot of resources out there for parents who need to talk about these things. In fact, we're discouraged from talking about them. We're encouraged to post on Facebook all the good things, but we're sort of put in a conspiracy of silence for the other things, you know? And I remember having talks with Kelly, and I'm sure Kelly won't mind me sharing this. It's like, let's talk. Let's talk outside of the office. Let's talk, you know, somewhere where you can really tell me how you feel. You can really tell me what it feels like when people ask you, what college is he going to? Where is he going to be swimming for next year? When your child, in fact, is not going to college, where your child may not even graduate from high school. I had someone like that this year that didn't graduate from high school. But we are encouraged to not talk, because if we talk, we make everybody nervous because our child is not 100% perfect, right? I mean, it really is, Vicky put it in the chat, a conspiracy of silence. And I think Kelly's a part of Kelly's life work and a part of Mike's life work is to get rid of that conspiracy where you can, because that parent next to you in church or at that Jack and Jill meeting
Yep,
is
that's
in the
where
same
I
boat as you are.
am.
I tell people all the time, and it's not the most positive thing, but most boys go through some trauma becoming an adult. Most Black boys go through something. They have some defining event. But I want to go back to you specifically, and encourage you to do what you've been doing, which is prioritizing your children's mental health. We can get them to, if you prioritize, you get the team available, you get the help you need, you pause when you need to pause, right? And don't think that they have to be at a certain point by the time they get to 18. Then you're doing the right things. Get a team around you with including the primary care physician, psychologist, psychiatrist, even if you need like partial hospitalization or intensive outpatient, maybe for the summer. You pull them out of the school that wasn't feeding him or that was destroying him. Do everything that you can do to get that team around your children. Now, then I want you to focus on getting the team around you because they can't make it unless you make it. So that physician, your primary care, make sure you get all your checkups, get yourself a therapist, and surround yourself with people that are supportive of you trying to take care of yourself and your children and not putting out that front. And so that means that some of the people in your circle are not going to be supportive, and you have to separate yourself from them because you don't need, well, just push them ahead, girl. You know, these kids are too, they're not tough enough. They're all this stuff that I hear on a day-to-day basis. I want you to like surround yourself with people and messages that are encouraging you to do what you need to be doing right now, which is when you're not working, is to center your focus on yourself and your children and your family. And take, I know this sounds really counterintuitive with that schedule as a surgeon, but to block out some time for yourself. I know that even if it's just 2 hours where you go and sit in a park, You know, take that time once a week to start. Okay. Or 10 minutes, 15 minutes every day where you just sit on the bed with a meditation tape and, you know, focus on yourself and your breathing. I'm going to put a couple of resources online on the chat about some of those resources. I just started this thing called Healthy Minds. It's a meditation startup program. Anyway, I'm glad you talked. Get your resources. And if you need other resources, just send me an email. I'll put my email in the chat. Or if you need to have a chat with me, send me an email.
Thank you.
Let's see if I can access where you are on the East, where your son is on the East Coast, and where you're living now. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
And we can talk about that stuff offline. But thank you so much for sharing, because you've given everybody that's listening the freedom to share. And I hope that you continue to speak out.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I would just add that your children are already wonderful and great. Mm-hmm. They have you as their mom, and they will be fine. They already are fine. And so if you can walk in that space of faith that God has got them wrapped around, they are fine. And so that faith is really, really what has gotten me through these last 4 years, is really faith over fear. And so if you can change the narrative and speak that into your children about how great they are, not how great they're going to be, they're already great.
Right.
And leave it at that. And I love you.
Right.
Period.
Right. Keep up the dialogue. Nothing is more important than your relationship. No achievement, no grade.
Right.
None of that is more important than your relationship. And even if you have to go back to them and say, you know, I was pushing you in this way, or I was doing these things, but we're now centering on all of our mental health and well-being. It's okay to pivot.
That feedback is helpful. My husband and I are very prayerful. And so it is encouraging to hear what you're saying, because yes, you're right. I think we are on the right track. So we're going to, so that makes me feel better. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
And we're staying prayerful with you. Sorry, Kelly. We're talking over each other.
I'm smiling because there's still moments where, you know, we all have our moments. And my eldest is home right now for a week or so. And there are moments where I literally have to smile and walk away. And that's a very different Kelly than the old Kelly, where I would say something about whatever the situation was. But now I say, I love you. And I turn around and walk away.
Right.
And it diffuses everything. It protects my peace.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize a lot of what is happening is not really him. It's, you know, the alcohol or the drug or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And so I realize that's a disease, and I love my child despite that, despite of. And so that helps me keep the peace, keep my peace.
Oftentimes too, I think what we do when we have adults is that we lay back a little bit, right? We do like what Kelly just said, you don't offer the advice, but even if you have something to say, think about how you say it. Like, so I usually give myself a day or two, and I try to gear my comments to the 24-year-old child and not the 5 or 6-year-old child. Like not the fix it, you need to do this thing, but you know, I heard myself saying the other day, well, you know, you seem to be following this kind of pattern, just to sort of like give him some feedback on how he deals with stress. Right. And that's all I said. And I noticed he kind of twirled his head, like he was actually listening. You know, when this happens, you tend to do these things. And I just wanted to say that. Right. So,
can you comment on the comment that's in the chat?
I can't.
I can read it to you. It says, okay, I recently found out that my neighbor's son with mental health challenges at age 34, died homeless on the train, even though he was affiliated with the program. I have known him since he was a baby. His parents did not tell anyone. I found out from a neighbor. My neighbor's death on the train is a trigger because my adult son has been homeless and refuses to get help. I live with this fear. What kind of future will my son have?
You know, it's tough to tell. I mean, there are, I completely understand that the depth of your fear and that you worry about your son out there, basically open to elements, open to all kinds of things. I don't know, it's hard for me to say because I don't know what you have done, but I am sure that you've tried to access resources for him. I'm sure that you've spoken out about these things. And my advice is that you continue to do that, but to try to see if there's any resource you haven't uncovered, to try to like communicate with him that you love him and that you still love him regardless, and that his life is a life that is worthy of continuing, and that it should he want help, you will provide help at any point in time. That's pretty much what I can say. And again, I don't underestimate parents being prayerful and praying that their minds be open, praying that the child comes in literally and figuratively from the cold. And that I have seen it happen many times where the child decides, the young adult decides that they're going to get help, that they are not going to live like this anymore. I recently attended the funeral of one of my brothers. And one of the stories that came out, he had a troubled earlier life. But he himself decided in his 30s, early 40s, to, if he got out of this, the trouble that he was in at that particular time, that he would get himself straight. And he did. He joined the church. He got off drugs. He got a job. He got married at 60. So we just don't know who and how our children will be delivered, but oftentimes they are. But we will be praying for you and your son. Kelly, I can't read the chat.
There's no new comments. Yeah, I was just saying I'll pray for her, maybe, and for her. But it's really hard to share. I understand.
And it's so hard.
It's, yeah. There's a lot of guilt early and a lot of shame and embarrassment. So appreciate you sharing your story. There's nothing to be ashamed of or embarrassed of. We have to learn and we have to rewire ourselves. From a parenting perspective, at least that's what I've learned. When we work on ourselves, our relationships get better. That's true with our children and with everything.
And the comment about the neighbor's child, I just want to address that. Again, they may not be sharing because people may not be open. They may be embarrassed and ashamed themselves. But it just sort of is instructive to us about when people bring these issues to us, a lot of times they just want us to listen. They don't really want necessarily need you to solve it, but to withhold the judgment. Tell them that you understand and you care and that you're praying for them and their child. Okay, someone has a comment in there about financial support.
I don't see that. That might be a direct note to you.
Okay, yes. Okay, sorry, it is.
While she's reading that, if anybody wants to come off mute and you're on your phone, you can hit star six. Some of you may be on your computer. Some might be on your phone. You can hit star six to come off of mute. And it looks like somebody did just now.
Hi, can you hear me?
Good morning.
Yes.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, Kelly. This is Sheila. How are you?
Oh, hi, Sheila. I'm good. I'm at my mom's house, so you make me
Oh,
sound like
I tell your
Sheila.
mom I said
We
hi.
grew
Okay.
up together in Shaker Heights, a few
And
blocks from each
yes.
other.
And I'm a bit nervous, so if I stumble through my words, that's
Take your
why.
time and happy to
Okay.
have you here, Sheila.
And I know I did share with you, Kelly, about my son Marcus. And he is now 32. So during like his teenage years, he, experienced mental health issues. And I noticed he was having issues, especially with socializing with other kids. He didn't have many friends, and he was just quiet. I think if I were, as I look back, it was like he was maybe had autistic characteristics. Maybe that's kind of the best way to explain it. So he did well in school. He went to University of Maryland for 2 good years. But then when he was going into his junior year, right before he was going to go back to school, he had a mental breakdown. Like a psychotic episode, I guess that's what I would call it. And it was just a very scary situation. And we ended up calling the police because he, some of the things that he was doing. But fortunately, this division of the police that came were trained in mental health, recognizing a mental health crisis. So they were able to go, they were able to, talk to him. They did end up handcuffing him and taking him away, but the way that they approached it was where we felt that he was in that we felt that his it was necessary to do, but he ended up going to a mental hospital. So we did not regret calling the police. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes,
Sometimes
I do.
we're scared, but the blessing was that they were trained in a mental health crisis. They knew how to handle it. So he ended up in the mental hospital. They put him on some medication. I can't remember. Maybe it was Haldol or something. And then, he only stayed so many, maybe a week or two, and then he came home. We ended up trying to find, some therapy for him, a therapist, a psychiatrist. And we ended up finding one. She was very good. And he started taking some medication, but I had to, and we did see some difference, but then he decided he didn't want to take it anymore. So I would struggle with him, struggle and struggle and struggle and struggle with him to try to take it. He didn't. So then he had another mental breakdown, ended up in the hospital again. And so it was kind of the same scenario. He came home, and then it was kind of the same thing with me begging him to take his medication. And he actually ended up taking the medication. He did. He found a really good psychiatrist and who he connected with really well. And he had been on the medication for a while where I was getting him to take it. And then he started taking it on his own. And he said to me, Mom, I don't want to end up in the hospital again. So that's why he, has been taking it. And I'll say he was on a high dose. And through a lot of his 20s, he was just kind of doing things around the house, sleeping a lot for many years. So then he ended up deciding he wanted to get a little part-time job where he was just doing stocking. He had a few jobs here and there, and he, I'm sorry, I'm stumbling because I'm just a little nervous telling the story, but he He has a job now. And then we've noticed over the last, he's 32 now, I'll say this, over the last 2 years, I've noticed a difference in him where he's getting out of the house more. He's gotten more hours at his job, and he has changed his diet. And so let me just get to the part to where he is now. He has reduced, and what I'm sorry, I'm stumbling. What I found out over the past, let's say, year, is that he actually on his own reduced his medicine. And so he's like, Mom, I found now that I've reduced my medicine that I feel better. I know everybody's story is different, but he was on a high, the whole thing I want to say is that he was on a high dose medication, but as he reduced it, he's feeling better. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, he may allow him to feel things. Right, like so much medication just suppresses a lot of emotion.
Yes, and that's exactly. And so he's on a low dose now. He's working many hours. He's getting out and going, taking walks. He's changed his diet. And the really good news is that he got a full scholarship to become a real estate appraiser. So that is his path now. And so I would just want to say to you, to those that just don't give up hope, because he's now 32. I just kind of kept my expectations low, because we were just saying, hey, my husband and I would say, hey, patience, persistence, set goals, but just low expectations. So now,
I'm so glad that you chose to speak today and that you knew Kelly and there's some trust there that you came on here because I see, first of all, just congratulations for hanging in there and the valuing this young man's life and his existence and honoring him by keeping him clothed and fed while he's been going through a very, very long storm. In this society, we want things to happen so quickly, and a lot of times we give up. But you hung in there, and you, the points that I want to, other than congratulating you, is that for people to look at the medication and to understand that it may not be right. It may have to be adjusted. It's not like penicillin. It doesn't work or not work. You could shift the dosage. You can shift the type of medication to get the right kind of medication support. And the last thing I want to say is that you built up, it wasn't that you had low expectations. You had appropriately calibrated expectations. Right. So sometimes I'll see people and they're like, child is just coming out of like really severe mental illness. And they're like, I want them to go to undergrad. Well, they're just not ready for that. They're not ready for a full-time job. Like the goal is to get them out of the house, walking around the block, and to like talk to one person. Right. That might even actually be your weekly goal. To start off, I mean, I've actually had kids in therapy where I actually went to their house and walked around the block with them, right? That was our weekly activity. So I want to congratulate you on that. And then the last one I want to talk about, I can't remember if it was you or someone else, but understanding the fact that a lot of counties and a lot of cities now have mental health support. I tell parents to find out what they are, and if you can before you actually need them, right? We live. I live in Montgomery County. They have units that are trained. Prince George's and individual officers who are trained. So call in your precinct, and ask for resources. Prince George's County, the neighboring county, has mental health units where they'll do check-ins. Try to figure out what the help is in terms of law enforcement. I've heard from people like DSAP that have told us to, like, make sure your child might be introduced at local precincts, and use your suicide hotlines. Kelly posted one, and your helplines, 311 in Prince George's County is the non-emergency number. So find out what your resources are, and if you can find out before a crisis, do so. And thank you so much, Sheila. Like I said, you outlined our why we're here perfectly, as all the calls have today. Kelly, I just want to take this one last question that was in the chat with me.
Sure.
And it's about money. And I want to see if I could bring it up. It's about people, or the child using money to like do things like vaping, and she's trying to support him as he enters grad school, but she doesn't want the money to be used toward alcohol, vaping, those kinds of things. Your child is in grad school. Your support is not obligatory, right? You don't have to help him, but if you want to help him, and I, support people supporting their kids through graduate school, but set some limits. Tell them that you're going to give them a certain amount of money. Divide the responsibility. He has to work and come up with $3,000 or $4,000 of his yearly, spending his yearly spending money. That also gets our kids to start working and get some responsibilities about showing up on time, and it gives them value work experience. And if you set a limit, and your limit is whatever, $400 a month, if they run out of money, have them start accepting responsibility for that, right? That's your we talked about your budget. That is your budget, and I'm not adding on to it, because then they will start to oftentimes think about allocating their own money, right? If they spend 400 on vaping one month, and you don't rescue them, then that they start to see. Now, you do this with a lot of warning, right? You don't just cut them off. You tell them, look, this is what we're going to do this year. You're in graduate school, things are different. And the last thing I want to say is that you talked about bank accounts and looking at the bank account. And so as they move into graduate school, I urge you to consider stop looking at their banking account. Have it not be on your screen. Have it not be any of your business, because if you're going to try to start modeling them, you need to stop monitoring it, right? And also, well, sometimes what we know as parents is harmful. And so sometimes, like, taking a step back and not looking at every single transaction is healthier for both of you, and you're modeling that they have to take charge of it. When you're monitoring it every day, you're modeling that they can't handle it, right? So I'm gonna just say, throw that thought out there, stop looking. Kelly has thrown up some resources
It's
for
the
the
988 hotline.
988 line,
Mm-hmm.
and they can help in terms of suicide and crisis hotline. Again, sometimes some jurisdictions have a 311 code, but dial your local, find out where your local police precinct is, because in terms of emergencies, they are going to be probably the people that respond. And try to introduce yourself to some people there if you're dealing with a child that has mental health issues, or if you're dealing with a child who has autism or intellectual disabilities.
We have time for one more comment or question. Anybody has anything you'd like to share or ask Dr. Linda?
Hello, I have a quick question.
Sure. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much, Kelly, for this space. I initially started coming on the call over a little over a year ago, and this was pretty much outside of court, the only place that I could really talk about what I was going through with parental alienation and going through a custodial case. The case has reversed itself or resolved itself. My son is back home. There was some challenges at the beginning of him coming back home, behavioral wise, and those have since subsided. But there's a lot of things that I learned going through the judicial process to fight for my son. And now I shared a little bit. I shared a very little bit in a video post, and I published a book where I talked about it in a very small way, because at that time when I published, it was still a court process or a court proceeding. And so now I want to talk about what happened more in depth, but some people are advising me not to, just because I don't want to breach my son's privacy. I don't want to tell his story, which is not my place to do publicly. However, there's parts of my story as a mom, and parts of the story that incorporate so much injustice or abusive power, that I feel like me being silenced is additional hurt to something that already hurt me. And so I'm just wondering, you know, and I know, like, for example, just to, you know, tie it in a bow, it's a lady that went viral for sharing about a man that she married who was strange and whatnot, and she went big viral, and a lot of opportunities came about from it. And one of my mentors said, well, what would be your reasoning? You always have to look at the reasoning. What's your motivation for telling it? And I told her, I said, well, Department of Children and Family Services, what it's called here in Illinois, has been in my life since I was a kid. So I've been in the system. I took my sister out the system. My son had a occurrence with them where I had to fight for him. And I've worked with them as a law student. And so I think that because of my experiences with them throughout my life, I think it's a pressure for me to speak out about it, because I know it's so much stigma and shame associated with it that people never speak out. And what the mom was saying, Miss Sheila was saying about calling the police, I don't know about everywhere, and it may be everywhere, but when I was going through with my son, there was no 988 number. There's a 988 number here in Chicago for mental health crisis now. But when I went through with my son, I was so surprised to see that when you call for an ambulance, they're going to send the police. And that's a very scary thing, very scary thing. And so just some of those things like that, that people aren't aware of, resources, how to handle the proceeding. You know, so many things I learned and took notes on everything. And I feel like if I don't share it in some kind of way, it brings more pain and grief to me. And so I'm just trying to ask what your thoughts are around that.
So there are two competing things. First of all, it sounds like you've gone through a heck of a lot, and that you have gone up against the legal system and won back your child is phenomenal. And I want to congratulate you for having a wherewithal and the mental strength and the resources to get that done. And then I want to talk to you a little bit now in the short time we have about the competing interests here, right? And they're not necessarily competing. They're varying interests. There's the interest of your child, right? In his story and what he would choose to be public and what he would want in the public domain. But it's also your own needs to continue to seek justice, to speak out, to help other people, to sort of lay the groundwork for the kinds of proceedings that you've gone through. They don't necessarily have to compete, but because of your child and because of the public way that social media and books and those things work, you know, there have to be a consideration of what might harm your child and actually what might harm you. So, you know, because a lot of times we do want to speak out, but we don't always anticipate the consequences. And because of where you are, I would just suggest that you have a place that you speak, that you have someone who's under some sort of confidentiality pledge to consult with people about doing this in terms of the ramifications for your child and the ramifications of you. But if there is a possibility that you can speak out, I am not urging you to not speak out. I'm just urging you to consider for now whether it's the appropriate time and get some supports around how you sort of speak out. Does it make sense?
Yes, it does. The how is definitely the thing
Yes.
I've been trying to strategize on.
Right. Does someone have their hand up? I think, well, we're out of time in any event.
We are
Kelly?
out of time. I was just going to say we are out of time and appreciate everybody for speaking today who shared and who opened up. Thank you for that. And we're over by just a minute. But appreciate you, Dr. Linda, for being here every month on the first Sunday of the month. Thank you as always. And Dr. Vicki Johnson is going to close us out with a prayer for this beautiful Sunday.
Good morning, Dr. Linda.
Morning.
I just love first Sundays. It is so
Thank
great
you.
and so generous with your support. And before I close with prayer, I just want to encourage those, I want to encourage us to continue sharing this call. You know, if it's blessing you, you know someone else that it will bless. And not for the numbers, but for the advocacy and for the support that we find here. Just asking that you invite one person, you know, on a week that you're going to join. Just share what's taking place here because it is so, so powerful. And I want to close today with how we started, which is the Serenity Prayer, because there have been such a diverse topics of sharing today that the Serenity Prayer covers all of us in that. And that is, God, grant us the serenity to accept the things that we cannot change, courage to change the things that we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We thank you so much for this safe space. Bless us to go throughout the rest of this day and grant us grace to meet here again next week. Bless Kelly, bless Dr. Linda, and bless all whose households are represented on this call today. We give you glory for all of these things, even those unspoken requests, those things that members on the call today are not quite ready to share. You know all things. So, God, give us grace. Give us grace. Give us patience and help us to trust the process. Because we know that all things work together for our good and ultimately for your glory. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Have a powerful day, everyone.
Amen.
Thank
Thank you,
you.
Dr. Vicky. So always awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. Have a beautiful day. And we'll
Thank
be
you.
back next Sunday at 9 a.m. Thank you so much. Take care.